Good evening. Our topic of discussion this evening centers around an in-depth study entitled Death, Bereavement, and Creativity. The study takes a look at the effects of death and grieving on the workings of artists and the effect that that has on the prices realized of those works. Our guest is Katie Grady. She's professor of economics at Brandeis International Business School. And Katie, good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, thanks. I think this is a fascinating topic. Maybe let's get started, if you would, and talk to our listeners about the origin of and the startup of this project.
So back in May of 2014, I was at a conference at Oxford, and one of my colleagues presented a paper on three composers, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt, and how the well-being in their life affected their work. And I thought, hey, I can do this for a whole bunch of artists, and I can do it statistically. And I was curious, you know, what would happen. So that one presentation gave me the idea to do it for artists.
Before you started in on your project, where were you regarding what you anticipated the possible outcome?
So I wasn't sure. And I think the reason I wasn't sure is that in a lot of folklore, or I don't know if folklore is the right word, but among artists, there is this belief that you need depression or angst to produce good work. I think this might come from the fact that Picasso's Blue Period was launched by the death of his friend Carlos Casagemas, perhaps. I mean, and many art historians know about this. But I was curious, is this true? Because on the one hand, if we're sad or we don't feel well, we often don't do very good work. So at the end of the day, I thought, hey, this is an empirical question, and it's a question that I can answer objectively.
So how did you dig in?
Well, that was May of 2014, and then fortunately I was on sabbatical during the fall, and I started by going to the library and researching artists. And I took a list of artists that another economist had used, and I just took his list to start with and started going through them. It actually turned out to be a lot harder than I thought to find information on deaths of family members. It was quite a project. I ended up also going into genealogical studies to find that. But I ended up with pretty good data on 48 different artists. 33 of them are French Impressionists, and 15 are American artists. And then I downloaded data from Hislop's Art Sales Index and correlated the names of the artists with their prices at auction 100 years later.
That's very interesting, Katie. Tell me, what are some of the more interesting or maybe unexpected criteria that you discovered through that research?
Well, I actually found that artists don't do their best work after the death of a friend or a relative. In fact, in the 1 or 2 years after the death of a friend or relative, on average, their paintings sell for significantly less than at other times of their career. That is, on the surface, somewhat surprising to many artists. On the other hand, when I started talking to my colleagues who are psychologists, they said, well, you know, of course that's correct. You don't expect people to do well when they're under duress. And in fact, they pointed me to the Hungarian psychologist Mihály Csikszentmihalyi, who is very famous for flow theory. Flow theory says when you're creative, you're in a state of flow, a flow state, and anything that interrupts that interrupts your creativity. And he lists death of a friend or relative as something that can really interrupt your creativity. And to me, that makes complete sense.
I wanted to just touch on your phrase of artists creates their best works. And I think your objective approach to this is not simply not looking at the art as much as it's looking at the prices of the art. In other words, the proof is in the pudding. Is that how you're interpreting their best works?
Yes. And for some people, this is controversial. For an economist, maybe not so much. I should say these are auction prices, again, you know, in some cases, 100 years after the painting was created. Now, what's the problem? Some people don't like price. So one other thing we did is we went out and we got museum collections. And it turns out that the famous museums also carry their works that were produced in the year or two after the death of the friend or relative less than works produced by those artists at other times of their life. So it's consistent with what museums are doing. There are many lingering questions, but one question one might have is, well, maybe they're just as creative at that time, but the work that they produce is depressing and people don't like it as much. And not too sure how I can answer that, though there is evidence that artists don't finish their work after deaths of friends and you don't get as much done. So that's one way to answer that question.
Let's talk about subject matter for just a moment. Did you find changes in subject matter from what the artist was doing previously to the bereavement?
So, you know, I had over 12,000 prices and 15,000 paintings. So as an economist, I can't look at the subject matter. That's something that's very difficult for me to do. It's very important, and an art historian would do that. But that's not part of my study. All that being said, there is a famous example of Edward Manet's friend, Charles Baudelaire, died in 1867, and Manet started painting the funeral, okay, which clearly is a depressing subject matter. And he actually never finished the painting. So there is evidence elsewhere that suggests that. But in my study, I did not look at subject matter.
You, as a professional economist, if you will, it's a good reminder that the study centers on that, and that's part of the criteria for your study. So I think it's very interesting. Let me ask you this. The study is complete now, and you've had some time to sit with the results. What's the takeaway?
Maybe twofold. I think, one, I've had several artists come up to me and say, you know, hey, this is really good. I don't have to be depressed to do good work. And one person seemed quite relieved, actually. She was a writer, and that, you know, maybe she doesn't have to wallow in her depression to be a really good writer. So I think that's one very important takeaway. The other takeaway, I would say, is that, you know, we use art, and as an economist, I use art in art prices because we know when these things were painted, and we know at least one measure of their value. So we can answer this question. But what extent does this actually transfer to other areas, not only of the arts, but of work in general? And I would argue that it does. And just, you know, out of interest, I mean, companies have bereavement counseling because they understand that when an employee suffers a death of a friend or a relative, that it is hard on that employee, and they are probably less productive during that period. So I don't think that this is anything terribly surprising that we didn't know, except that there was this, I would probably say, maybe myth going on around art that you needed to be depressed to be super creative, which I would like to put behind us as a myth.
I find the subject fascinating, and I find the study a wonderful confirmation of just simply the fact that when we're sad, it carries over into the things that we're doing around us. Katie, I'd like to thank you for your information and this exciting topic this evening.
Thank you very much for having me on your show. I very much enjoy talking about my work.
Our guest has been Katie Grady, Professor of Economics at Brandeis International Business School. You can find a link to the study at our website, wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. This is Stuart Holman.